5. No. She let the scroll roll up with a snap and kicked a nettle with her foot, sending it bouncing toward Kanawa and forcing him to turn over onto his side. He winced with pain as tiny flashes of light popped and winked before his eyes. Despite the fresh reminder of his ravaged rib cage, he noticed for the first time that she wore delicate-looking sandals of woven green grass revealing portions of her slender brown feet. She couldn't have walked far at all in those, he realized. "You will report to the nearest encampment at once," she said, as if speaking to a slightly dull child. "Besides, we'll be safer with the army than out here in the forest with those extinct creatures around." He ignored the bait, focusing instead on the fact that there was no tremble in her voice, no hint of fear at all. Not even the sound of a bone snapping flustered her as Jeer tore through a rock's pelvis. Perhaps, he conceded, what they say about women is true. They are tougher. "Is the army near?" Kanawa asked. "They were 3 days by horse to the south on the other side of the Jubavor," she said, naming a river Kanawa vaguely remembered crossing years earlier. "But that was over a week ago. Where they are now, I do not know. We should start at once. You are clearly in no condition to fight off any more of those beasts." A tree cracked just outside the clearing. Kanawa jumped to his feet so fast it felt as if he broke another rib. He stumbled to his musket and picked it up, spinning in a slow circle as he searched the edges of the clearing. Jeer raised his muzzle from the inside of a rock and growled in response. "What is it?" the woman whispered, the wicked-looking dagger magically reappearing in her right hand. "There were 4 rocks," Kanawa said, pointing the muzzle of the musket at the bodies. "But we only killed 3. "Surely your Bengar killed it somewhere nearby," the woman said, gesturing at Jeer, who was looking questioningly at Kanawa. Turning to Jeer, Kanawa made a clenched fist, then threw his arm out and opened his hand wide. "Hunt!" he commanded. The animal rumbled a deep sound and disappeared into the forest in a single bound. "Will he find it?" she asked, coming to stand next to Kanawa, even as she wrinkled her nose. Kanawa kept his eyes on the trees, but was very aware of her presence beside him. Heat roiled off her like the open door of a smithy's furnace. Then again, it might have been the pain of his rib cage. "Maybe, maybe not. If that thing didn't look back, it could be a long way from here." He spotted his cartridge pouch on the ground and walked over to it, deciding he'd better reload while he could. "You're not like any messenger I've ever seen before," he remarked, while gingerly ramming a new charge and ball into the musket. The woman's eyes narrowed and the stiletto flashed as she twirled it in her hand. "Messenger? I am Vecina Tekoi, daughter of Almec Tekoi, governor of Hijla province, and supplier to Her Majesty's Imperial Army and the Outer Territories Trading Company in these lands." "Ah, so your father's a sutler, then?"
"A sutler? Do I look like the daughter of some rag-and-bone merchant?"
Kanawa took a quick moment to run his eyes over her again. "Indeed you don't. Well, now, seeing as we've established how your father supports Her Majesty's troops, fair lady, pray tell in what manner do you service them?" Vecina's retort remained unspoken as Jeer suddenly leaped back into the clearing. He sniffed the air for a moment and stretched, sheathing and unsheathing great curving claws that reflected the starlight with lethal intent. When he was finished, he walked over to where they were standing and lifted a hind leg. Vecina yelled in protest, quickly stepping out of the way and into Kanawa's arms. "It means he likes you," he said. He reached over and patted Jeer on the head. The Bengar began to purr, and Kanawa relaxed. The 4th rock was long gone.
"It's disgusting," she retorted.
Kanawa nodded and took a deep breath of her dark hair, grimacing with the effort. He imagined it was wonderfully perfumed, but the lingering odor of the skunk dragon and Jeer's enthusiastic attempts to make half the known lands his own defeated the exercise. "I think you can let go now," she said. "Your musket is digging into me." "That's not my musket," Kanoa replied, brandishing the weapon in his right hand in front of her while he kept his left around her waist. He pulled her a little closer. "You know, I did save your life tonight. In some parts, that sort of thing engenders a certain amount of gratitude." Vecina stilled at the suggestion. She's not so high and mighty after all, Kanoa thought, suddenly concerned that she might actually take him up on what had been no more than a bluff. A year in the forest or not, he was in no condition for that. Vecina turned around in his arm and faced him, her lips only inches from his. He was still wondering what they'd taste like when her fist slammed into his stomach, sitting him squarely on his backside.
"You filthy pig! I am no harlot, and you, sir, are no officer."
Tears streamed down Kanoa's face as he gasped for breath, and then he laughed, despite the pain.
"You're right there, my lady. I'm no officer, not anymore."
He picked himself up from the ground for the second time that night. He hurt from head to toe, and suddenly there was nothing even remotely funny about anything.
"You take that piece of parchment with you the next time you use the powder room, because that's all it's good for. The elf on that scroll no longer exists."
"You really are him, aren't you?" Vecina said quietly. "You were the one who killed the Viceroy to save your people. And ours."
She reached out a hand to touch his ruined left ear, but Kanoa pulled away.
"You think I'm a hero? Do heroes end up exiled in a bloody forest? No, my lady, you have it all wrong. I am one of the Discara, the tainted ones marked by the Shadow Monarch. Just good enough to fight for the Empire, but never, ever to be trusted."
A year of bitter resentment flared up.
"Be afraid, my lady. Molten ore flows through my veins, and daisies are poison to me. I live in caves like dwarven folk, and eat raw meat off the bone."
He ignored her crossed arms and scrunched up nose and pressed on, needing to vent his anger at someone.
"You see before you a spiritual descendant of the Shadow Monarch, the Hororivka, Oathbreaker, the Forsaker of the Forest, Delver of the deep magic long ago lost to this world. Fear me, O pure and righteous one. I was marked by her, ruler of the high forest where trees grow in unnatural and vile ways, and elves have little patience for asinine conversations."
"Jarata, my sore!"
she yelled, swinging back her hand as if to slap him.
"Easy there, my lady. No need for that kind of language."
As fast as the anger had come, it bled away. He tried a smile, but she wasn't having it.
"You have no idea what it's like to suffer under the foolishness of myths and legends. I left the hinterland to get away from all that, but it follows me around like a plague."
"Myths and legends?" she asked, shaking her head. "They don't look like either," she said, pointing to the dead rocks.
"No, they don't. But it doesn't matter. You wouldn't understand."
"Really now?"
Vecina said, her voice sharp, her eyes flashing.
"The story of the elf witch across the ocean is well known even here. The Empire brought more than oppression to my people. It also brought stories of the Zargul Iraxa, as we call her, Seeker of the Darkness."
She appeared to struggle for control of herself, then spoke again in a quieter voice.
"Your ancestors forged a bond with the Wolfolks. They learned to harness the Wolfolk's great power, using it to care for the natural order."
"I know the legend," Kanoa said, sighing.
"Have you seen this forest realm of the Shadow Monarch?"
Kanoa carefully let out a breath in exasperation.
"No. I mean, yes, but it's just a bunch of trees."
"You went up there, then?"
Kanoa wanted to say yes to end this conversation, but looking into her eyes, he found himself suddenly unable to lie.
"No, No one goes up there. But that doesn't mean the legend is true. Entirely.
Vecina made a face, then looked back at the rocks.
And these creatures?
I honestly don't know, Kanawha said, realizing just how true that was. How did they know his name? Maybe she did send them after me. Or, he said, suspicion flaring in his mind, maybe she sent them after someone else.
Vecina's mouth formed a perfect O.
Me? You're mad. Clearly some elves can be in the forest too long.
He took a step toward her.
My senses are clear enough to know something here doesn't make sense. How is it you just happen to have a scroll calling me back to service?
There are those who believe you can be of service again. Many of my people consider you a hero for what you did, she said,
a note of admiration grudgingly modulating her voice.
That still doesn't explain you.
Vecina looked as if she might take a swing at him, then relaxed.
Despite what you think, elves aren't the only people in tune with the natural world. I have a gift for finding things, so I was sent out to look for you.
Alone? Kanawha asked, refusing to believe any of this.
Not alone, she said quietly, lowering her eyes. We were attacked by those things, and I was captured. And you know the rest.
Kanawha was certain that he didn't, not by a long cannon shot. But he decided to leave it alone for the moment.
By the way, what did you call me there a moment ago? I haven't heard that one before.
Vecina pursed her lips.
Gerata Mysor. It means bloodless shadow.
Kanawha shrugged.
A being without soul, she said. An elf not of the natural world. You carry weapons forged in fire, were marked by her and serve the empire that oppresses my people. You have forsaken your destiny and have turned your back on the Ruarmana.
Kanawha gave her a questioning look.
Trees. They are the bridge between the sky and earth. Only trees reach both up to the heavens and down into the bones of the land.
Vecina brushed another strand of hair from her face and stared at him with intense curiosity.
What is your native name for them?
Lumber.
Vecina's eyes flashed with anger.
You are more iron than elf.
He held up his hands for a truce.
Look, as scintillating as our conversation is, perhaps we could save it for another time.
The pain in his ribs was now a steady throbbing that threatened to pound him right into the ground. Who knows what other beasties besides rocks are out here, and I don't want to be around when they smell all this.
Vecina looked as if she wanted to say a lot more, but held her tongue and began to pick up Kanawa's belongings from the ground, careful to avoid any made of metal.
Kanawha watched for a moment, then put the remnants of his uniform back on, grabbed those items she wouldn't touch, and tramped straight into the forest without looking to see if she would follow. He knew Jir would come along when he was done eating. After several minutes, he took a quick look over his shoulder and was surprised to see her only a couple of paces behind him. She moved with the assuredness of an elf of the long watch. Kanawha wondered just what would make a woman so clearly enamored of nature serve the Empire, the largest single destructive force in the world. He chose not to dwell on his own reasons. He was in enough pain as it was. It didn't take long for Kanawha to realize he was hopelessly lost. Chances of finding his hut tonight were as remote as the chances of his figuring out just where this day had gone so terribly, horribly wrong. Only this morning he had had the forest to himself, with just Jir and the damn bugs for company. Now he didn't know what to think about anything. The reappearance of extinct creatures, her extinct creatures, speaking one's name, along with a royal decree, also with one's name, had a way of changing one's outlook on life. Looking back to see that Vecina was still close behind, he pushed on through the trees, holding his ribs and cursing each step. He consoled himself that if this was the worst life could throw at him, things could only get better from here. Conover chose to believe that lie for as long as he could. He succeeded for an entire day.